sexual, and that it's just not okay that we're made to feel that we're less than.
So I've been talking today to Lonnie Jo Lee, who has published Unfit, the tale of one pregnant teen in the Bible Belt before women had choice. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Suzanne. It was great to be here.
This is Between the Covers, and I am Suzanne LeGrand.
Coming up next on KBOO, it's Black Book Talk.
KBOO is hiring. We're currently accepting applications for our volunteer coordinator position. We're looking for someone with experience in volunteer management and outreach to diverse communities, and preferably has experience with nonprofits. This is a full-time position. For the full job description and instructions on how to apply, see the job listing on our website at kboo.fm/employment. Applications are due Saturday, March 22nd by 5 p.m. KBOO is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer.
You said to call on your name, and I'm calling. You said to trust in your word, and I'm trusting. You said to lean on your arm, and I'm leaning. I'm stepping out on your word. You said you'd be my protection, my only and glorious Savior, my beautiful rose of Sharon. And I'm stepping out on your word.
Good morning, and welcome to the March edition of Black Book Talk, Women's History Month. I am Patricia Welch, Librarian Emeritus.
Emma Jackson Ford, Bookwoman.
And O.B. Hill, let's read, walk, and talk.
In honor of Black History Month, we of course want to talk about some books that we have in hand that focus on women, but we also want to go back in our file and pull some outtakes from some programs that we have that were remarkable women. We looked, and we have actually interviewed some outstanding women, and also women who have brought us information about other outstanding women. So we'll be interspersing those through the show today. So, you know, if you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can certainly go to the KBOO website, look up Black Book Talk, and look up these interviews, and you can hear the full interview once again. So, OB, you have lots of books in hand. So what are you bringing today?
Well, what I did was I went through a collection of books, and I said, well, let me look at something local. And there was a book on financial elder abuse. Oh. And I thought that was interesting because it was by Bernard Johnson, who is a local author here.
Okay.
And talking about his mother being abused, and I thought that was by another family member.
And sad to say, that is more prevalent than we would want to believe and want to hope. And since women do tend to live longer than men, unfortunately, a lot of women are in that position.
Yes. Okay. And another book, On Our Own Grounds, about Madam C.J. Walker. I thought that would be a very, very interesting book to bring up. So,
remind folks of who Madam Walker is.
Oh, go ahead. You know about her.
I know there's going to be a movie about her soon.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. But tell folks who don't know.
Oh, my goodness. This lady was a millionaire who created a lot of opportunity, not only for herself, but for other people, in selling different products for beautification of black women. Madam C.J. Walker, very, very interesting.
Speaking of beauty products,
I grew up getting my hair pressed with Madam C.J. Walker products. They smelled wonderful.
And there's this young entrepreneur. His name is, his first name is Richelieu. I can't even think of his last name. But he has gone from selling products on the street side, street corners in New York, to owning this like billion-dollar business. He repurchased Essence magazine, so now it's black owned. And he has reintroduced some Madam C.J. Walker products, or products under that name.
Whoa.
I haven't seen them locally. Maybe you have to go online, but I'm excited about that, and I am really excited about the upcoming movie. But talking about beauty and fashion, in this case, in Allure, we interviewed some folks who are really sort of little-known people. Rosemary Reed Miller wrote a book called The Threads of Time, The Fabric of History, Profiles of African-American Designers and Dressmakers. And much farther back than I would have thought, black women were, they were designing and creating clothes for very prominent people and were self-sufficient, were able to sustain themselves. So here's an outtake from our interview with Rosemary Reed Miller. And she talks about Ann Cole Lowe, the woman who made the wedding dress for Jacqueline Bouvier Kennedy.
Ann Lowe, who is a designer, also for High Society, has a fantastic story. She is from Alabama. Her mother actually did work for the governor's wife, so that's a very high status job to get a work for the governor of Alabama's wife. She actually did a wedding, but she really wasn't happy living in Alabama. She was free at that point, but it is not early 1900s. She moved to Florida, did very well, again, selling and designing for the top society people in the Tampa area. And she wanted to be a designer, a real full-fledged French designer. She saved up $19,000. Now that, again, that would be about over 20 times that, about 50-some thousand plus.
Okay.
And moved to New York. She took a course from a French designer who didn't believe she had money. She had to show him her bank booklet, and he still put her in a separate room. Heard that story before.
Yes.
But he did give her techniques that were even refined her level, she was super top anyway. And she opened a store on Lexington Avenue, a small store, and designed for, again, top society in New York City. She said she didn't want to do for celebrities. She just wanted to do for debutantes, bridal, and whatever. And she did work for Jackie Kennedy and her sister when they were in high school. Well, she was really doing work for her mother, but did work for them. And when the wedding came up, even though Jackie Kennedy wanted to have a very severe kind of plain dress, like a Vera Wang, if you can get a visualization of that. Joe Kennedy and her mother wanted to have a more traditional dress, and Ann Lowe got the contract for the 11 people in the bridal salon, bridal party. The side story is that a couple days before the wedding, this is 1953, some water pipes burst in Anne's store, and about 7 or 8 dresses were damaged. And Anne had to do this. Anne was hoping to have a profit, et cetera, and didn't. She had to do the dresses totally over, and she could not charge the bride. And that wedding, I don't know if you have a visualization of it, but we thought in our studies. I'm from Philadelphia, and Grace Kelly married the prince from Monaco. Mm-hmm. That was a very, very big thing. But Joe Kennedy wanted one of his sons to become president, and Jack was 39 years old, and he was still running the streets. And Jackie was 19, and they just sort of kind of put a lasso around John and said, "You've got to stop and get married." And they, and even though Jackie was engaged to somebody else, a stockbroker, she knew that the Kennedy money was m- much, much heavier and was, you know, very much open to get married with John Kennedy. And so Joe Kennedy wanted to have anybody and everybody in America, again, you know, his son was running for president, or was going to run for president, to know about the wedding. So every photographer, just in massive publicity. However, which is, you know, the sad part, is that nobody, I looked at, they actually had stories before the wedding. Very seldom do you have a story the week before a wedding. The Boston Globe, New York Times, nobody had who the designer was. That wouldn't be hard to figure out or know. Nina Hyde here in Washington, D.C., who wrote for the Washington Post, started her whole article saying the dress was done by Negro designer Ann Lowe. Jackie was asked who did the design, and she said a colored dressmaker. Ann was furious, but that any reporter who was worth anything could have asked what is the name of the person. And so for years, people just kind of passed over the Washington Post, and it was kind of, the dress was lauded, but who did the dress was another thing. The dress won all kinds of awards and whatever. Parade magazine said it was the most beautiful wedding dress ever, but again, no name.
Such is life. Emma?
Little known stories.
Mm-hmm.
A book I just found lately. It's called Sing a Song for Gwendolyn Brooks. Gwendolyn Brooks was a poet, and I'm told that she was a tall woman, very imposing figure, with a voice that you didn't forget. And it said that when she walked into a room, everybody felt her presence. And when she did her poetry, it was wonderful. I was reading the other day that when Gwendolyn was a little girl in third or fourth grade, she had written a poem, and she lived in New York. And, no, she lived on the east side of Chicago. And she had written this poem, and the teacher did not believe she had written it and had been a little mean to her. So her mother went up to the school and to defend her daughter, and the teacher demanded, or the school officials demanded, that she write a poem on command right there. She wrote a poem that blew them away. So even at a very young age, she had a mastery of words. So this book is part of a series, and it's a series called The People Who Shaped Our World. It's 48 pages. It was published last year, 2019. It's a hardcover picture book. The age range is 5 and up. I didn't even say the author. The author is Alice Faye Duncan, and it was illustrated by Zia Gordon. It's called Sing a Song for Gwendolyn Brooks, and it's a beautiful book. It will be very appropriate for any library or for any young person that you wanted to introduce to People Who Changed Our World.
Well, I remember Gwendolyn Brooks when we were in college. We brought her to Portland State University during Black History Month. That's been quite a while ago. The book I want to talk about actually was written in the local newspaper, the Portland Observer, in 2018, Betty Before X. And it's a book that is for middle grade, a historical fiction novel inspired by the real life of Betty Shabazz, Malcolm X's wife. The book illustrates four poignant years in Betty's childhood and paints an inspiring portrait of a girl overcoming the challenges of self-acceptance and belonging that will resonate with young readers today. Very, very interesting book.
And I think you have a clip from that.
A quote?
I'm saying, I think you have a clip from the interview we did with Ilyasa Shabazz.
Oh, are we going to listen to that? My goodness, we've had her on too.
Look, we're bad. What do we know? So, yeah, I think I'm looking at our engineer. I hope we have a clip from
Why
the interview with Ilyasa Chavez.
Why was it that you chose to write this book at this time?
Well, I always wanted to write a book about my mother. I thought that, you know, number one, it's really interesting to see that Malcolm, you know, my mother's husband, Malcolm X, you know, the reasons that he chose Betty to be his wife, all that she was, you know, very compassionate, very inquisitive, just so many different characteristics that she possessed. I wanted to first write books about Malcolm. I wanted young people to find themselves in Malcolm. I wanted my father's work to be properly and accurately preserved. One of the things that was important to my mother after her husband had been politically assassinated was to make sure that his words spoke for themselves and not continue to be this man who was depicted by someone else. So loving my mother as much as I do and just respecting and honoring my father and really both parents, I wanted to make sure that I wrote these books, not so much that so Malcolm and Betty could shine, but more so that the work towards empowering, inspiring, educating young people could be realized. And reading the books, you know, they're exciting, they're more accurate stories of young Malcolm, of young Betty. Young people are able to find, you know, their power through Malcolm, through young Malcolm and young Betty.
Question, do you have a copy of Betty Before X nearby, handy?
Yes, I have. Yes.
Would you mind reading a passage for us? Maybe just the introduction?
All right. Betty, Betty. I hear my sister calling my name. Betty. Juanita's whisper floats across the room. She shares a bed with Jimmy. I share a bed with Shirley. When we were little, I didn't mind sharing a room with my three younger sisters. Our small bodies didn't take up much space. But now, I'm 11, and most nights, Shirley's knees end up in my ribs. Her arms, my neck. The covers mostly just cover her. And it's not sharing a bed that's so bad. It's how Juanita wakes up in the middle of the night, every night, needing to use the bathroom, but too afraid to go into the hallway by herself. Even though we have a nightlight in our room and one in the hallway. Betty, will you go with me? Juanita is whining now, and her voice is getting louder. I don't want her to go alone or to wake up Shirley and Jimmy, so I slide out of bed. Come on, I whisper, holding out my hand in the dark. Juanita takes it, and we tiptoe to the bathroom. I wait for her outside the door, leaning my sleepy body against the wall. There's a family photo next to me that I can barely see in the darkness, but I know it by heart because it's been hanging there since I moved here 4 years ago. I'm not in it. It's the first thing I noticed when Ollie Mae brought me home from the train station and took me to my bedroom, which is when I found out Ollie Mae was not just my mother, but also the mother of three other girls, Shirley, Jimmy, and little Juanita. And she was not just a mother, she was also a wife to Arthur Burke, who had two sons of his own. One was named Henry, and the other Arthur, who everybody called Sonny. So in one day, I went from having one aunt, one grandma, and a bunch of baby dolls, to having a mother, a father, three baby sisters, and two younger brothers. Every time I see this photo, I think I really don't belong here. That's my mother's house, and it doesn't feel like home. And here's why. Because Shirley, Jimmy, and little Juanita call our mother Mama, and I call her Ollie Mae. Because Shirley, Jimmy, and little Juanita look like me, but not fully like my sisters, since I'm the one with a different daddy. I spent the first day staring at all of them. When they weren't looking, especially Ollie Mae, trying to find myself in the arch of her eyebrows, the shape of her nose. I studied the thickness of her hair, her thin frame. And her eyes, they looked sad all the time, even when she was smiling. Her eyes were always apologizing, like she was telling me she loved me, but in a different kind of way. Like how you love a mistake that ends up not being so bad, after all. Like how you love the rain because even though it can make a mess of things, it still makes rainbows rise and flowers grow.
Our next author is Maya Angelou, my homegirl. Her first book, I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, features her grandmother prominently, and our first outtake is about her grandmother. Her last book, called Mom and Me and Mom, is about her mother and gives us a glimpse into her life when she was with her mother. Maya Angelou was interviewed by us 2 or 3 times. She was one of our most favorite interviews and authors.
Frequently, I have been asked how I got to be this way. How did I, born black in a white country, poor in a society where wealth is adored and sought after at all costs, female in an environment where only large ships and some engines are described favorably by using the female pronoun, how did I get to be Maya Angelou? Many times I have wanted to quote Topsy, the young black girl in Uncle Tom's Cabin. I have been tempted to say, I don't know, I just growed. I never used that response for a number of reasons. First, because I read the book in my early teens, and the ignorant black girl embarrassed me. Second, I knew that I had become the woman I am because of the grandmother I loved and the mother I came to adore. So that's why I wrote Mom, Me, and Mom.
When I first picked up the book, and thank you for reading it. It was great to hear it in your own voice. But when I first picked up the book from the station, I read the prologue because that was my question. I wonder why she wrote this book.
Yes. Well, see, one of the things I learned was that love heals and liberates. I had been, when I was 3 and my brother 5, my mother and father agreed to disagree and found they didn't like each other, and neither of them wanted the worry and the burden of having 2 toddlers. So they sent us, me and my brother, unaccompanied on the train from Los Angeles to a little village in Arkansas about the size of your studio there in Portland. And we actually arrived, thanks to the kindness of Pullman car porters and dining car waiters who took us off trains, put us on the next train, and so forth. We actually arrived there and stayed there with my grandmother, my father's mother. And she was everything. She was kind. She was quiet. She was over 6 foot when she died. And she moved softly. She used to say, "Sister, Mama don't know what she's going to do. Mama just going to step out on the word of God. Mama just going to step out, right out." And I used to picture this 6-foot-tall, huge woman, bigger than most men, not fat, just tall and broad, and with long dresses on. And I picture her standing up in the sky with nothing under her, and, you know, holding her up there, and with moons and suns swirling all around her head, just standing there. Oh, my lands, I loved her so. And I followed her around. I liked her, too. So that people used to say, "Sister Henderson, I see you got your shadow with you again." And she would look at me and say, "Yes, I guess so, because when I rise, she rises, and when I sit, she sits. And yes, she's my shadow, all right."
Why did you feel the need for this book, which really focuses on her? Because a lot of us felt that we knew her.
It was just a touch of Vivian Baxter. She She was an incredible woman. She changed through her, but she alone changed so much of the world.
Not just your life, but the world.
A seaman, able-bodied first-class seaman. Wow. She said, I called her once from Los Angeles, and I said, I'd like to see you. I'm going to go to New York, and I don't know how long I'll be gone, so I'd like to see you. She was in San Francisco. She said, oh, baby, please, yes. And let's meet in Bakersfield. And she said, I want to see you, too, because I'm going to see. So I asked her, you going to see what? She said, I'm going to become a seaman. So I asked, why? You know, she was about 5'4"
Oh.
She was, she owned nightclubs and hotels and gambling joints. And I asked why. She said, because they told me they wouldn't let women in their union. She said, you know what I told them? I said, you want to bet? I put my foot in that door up to my hip. Step over my foot, get in that union, get aboard a ship, and go to sea. And when she retired, black, white, Spanish-speaking, and Asian women gave a party for her in San Francisco, called her the Mother of the Sea.
Okay.
So she was just an amazing woman. She didn't take, as the old folks say, she didn't take tea for the fever.
And that is why we love Maya Angelou. I have a book to talk about, too. It's an old book. It's one of those what I call books of my heart, which means it's the kind of book that you go back to it and it makes you feel good at all times. The title of the book is Women of Hope, African Americans Who Made a Difference. Alice Walker is featured on the cover. The author is Joyce Hansen, and she has done the copy for this, and they're photographs by a variety of photographers. The people who are featured here are Ida B. Wells Barnett, the Delaney sisters, Septima Poinsett Clark, Ella Josephine Baker, Fannie Lou Hamer, Ruby Dee, Maya Angelou, Toni Morrison, Marion Wright Edelman, Alice Walker, Alexa Kennedy, May C. Jemison. And then she has a listing of more women of hope, and she has an annotated bibliography. And, you know, this is the month when we try to go back and dig up and remember those women who on whose shoulders we stand, women that we shouldn't forget. And I think that, unfortunately, a lot of young people have not heard of a lot of these women. We haven't really passed down the threads, passed down the story. So for anybody that wants to know about some outstanding women who have made a difference in all of our lives, I would highly recommend that you go to your library or go to your bookstore and get a copy of Women of Hope, African Americans Who Made a Difference. It's interesting. There's a quote on the back by Gloria Steinem. It says, Women of Hope will inspire all Americans, especially our youth, who have been denied the knowledge that greatness looks like them. So I think we have come to the end of this month. Anything else we need to share, folks? Okay, well, and I think we need to go out on a rousing beat and close with the song that we opened with, which is by Maya Angelou, singing a rousing song. And I'll be looking forward to coming back next month and seeing you all, and hopefully we'll have a really great guest. I don't even want to say his name, but hip-hop generation as well as everybody else. Keep your ears open. But this is Patricia Welch signing out for the day.
Hope to see you next month.
Bye-bye.
You said to call on your name, and I'm calling. You said to trust in your word, and I'm trusting. You said to lean on your arm, and I'm leaning. I'm stepping out on your word. You said you'd be my protection, my only and glorious Savior.
And we want to send out a special thanks to our engineer, Ray Bodwell. We step out on faith a lot. And sometimes we even know where we're going, but frequently we don't. But the person who makes sure that we land perfectly every time is Ray. And we just want folks to know, if you like the way this show sounds, thank Ray. If it's needs a little improvement. That probably means we need to do a little improvement, but we appreciate him. Thank you so much.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 12 noon. Coming up next is The Shocks of Sheba. You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K2A2 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. Oh, and on the web at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Live Your Dreams Party, Saturday, March 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wayfinding Academy in Portland. Live Your Dreams Party is Wayfinding Academy's annual fundraiser. This year's theme is comfort. This event will provide a welcoming environment to kick back, relax, try something new, and learn more about the Academy's mission. Again, that's Live Your Dreams Party, Saturday, March 7th from 6 to 9 p.m. at Wayfinding Academy, 8010 North Charleston Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO at the Clinton is a monthly film series that benefits your community radio station. This month's screening is Honeyland on Thursday, March 12th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater. Honeyland chronicles a Macedonian woman's journey in strife while cultivating honey using ancient beekeeping traditions. Again, that's Honeyland on Thursday, March 12th from 7 to 9 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage